Christians have claimed that the Bible teaches about a war in heaven. How do we know that? Welcome to Probe. We are beginning a new series with a general title, Gospel, 1844, and Judgment. It's Adventist stuff, so some of you who are not part of the Adventist tribe may need some additional help as we go along. It has to do with our story of birth, 1844, the Great Disappointment, but we'll talk about that as we go along. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College, and Paul Dibdahl, Associate Professor of Theology, also in the School of Theology. Welcome.
Thank you, Alden.
Thank you.
Now, let's talk about some of the key issues that are involved here, and I'll get some feedback from you as we go along, because it's a very complex issue, and the reaction to these will vary significantly within the community itself. And I'd like for us to canvas those and allow for the full breadth of Adventism as we know it and as we experience it in the church. The first question I'd like to ask is, the doctrine of the heavenly sanctuary, which grew out of the 1844 disappointment, the cleansing of the sanctuary, as it has come to be understood, it has been said that that is the only unique element in Adventism. How do the two of you respond to that comment? In what sense does this make us unique? Are there other ways that we could be unique? Have any insights as to how you'd address that?
Yeah, I don't think it would be the only thing that would make Seventh-day Adventism unique. I think Seventh-day Adventism is unique in the way in which it brings together a variety of teachings from Scripture and emphasizes certain of those teachings. So I wouldn't see it as the only thing that makes us a unique denomination.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think that as a whole body of belief, I would say the Doctrinal Assembly of Adventism is unique. But I don't think this one item makes us. There are other people who believe at least portions of this. Maybe the way Adventists put together the subject is distinctive, but I don't think it is a mark of complete uniqueness. It interests me that even in the official statements of belief, there is no item listed as a sanctuary doctrine. You know, it's a collection of beliefs that surround the atonement and the judgment and salvation and history and prophecy that are part of our understanding of Scripture, but it's not something that is so distinct that it makes the one only mark, no.
It is true, though, isn't it? And this is what I was taught, and I have not done all the exploration myself, but this particular doctrine, and basically the topic that we'll be looking at this quarter, it is a rather unique doctrine, or perhaps indeed a unique doctrine among Christians today.
Well,
so that's true, I think.
I think we would say that if you gave somebody the Book of Daniel today, there is no way that they could come to the conclusions that Adventists have come to. That's because our particular interpretation grew out of a particular experience, and in that sense, I would say it's very much like the New Testament's experience with the Old Testament. Only those believers who identified with the person of Jesus Christ see the Old Testament as Christians do. A Jew would simply say, that's not me, that's not us. So to see our experience as being a particular way of getting at larger issues, such as Christ's ministry in the heavenly sanctuary, issues of judgment, let's not be shy about saying, sure, it's our story.
I agree with you, and I agree with you that it is driven by a particular set of circumstances in history, which is true of a lot of Christian doctrines, you know, that we do not live outside of the flow of time, and that as circumstances come along, that God oftentimes uses those circumstances to create a nuance or to reveal a nuance and get people to see something that wasn't seen before.
Now, as we recognize, I want to move on to some questions, differing perspectives on this topic. One in particular is how this affects us from the standpoint of our Christian experience. In the early experience of Ellen White, who plays a key role in the Adventist experience, She talked about the conviction that God saves only the sanctified. In other words, an element of perfection there. The way people respond to this is really quite different. And how do you see, how have you reacted to the way people's experience comes to the doctrine of the judgment, the pre-Advent judgment, the sanctuary doctrine, those kinds of things? Do you have any perspectives that would be helpful to share at this point in terms of the diversity within the community?
Well, I do think that there are a lot of people who approach it, as you described, almost in a kind of a almost legal frame of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, judgment is a very scary thing. It is not good news that if there is any mark against your name, that you're going down, so to speak. So I know a lot of people who face the news about the judgment in Scripture with great fear.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's this great variety, and you sort of alluded to that, I think, in your question even. Personality, I think, plays a huge role in this. There are some people that are just seem naturally more optimistic,
mm-hmm.
and then some of us who are the opposite. And mm-hmm. so depending on that kind of those sorts of traits, I think we approach the whole issue mm-hmm. in a very different way.
See, my own solution is to transform the doctrine from one of being accused in God's presence to one being a witness for God's presence. Well, if you stand in court as the witness for God, it's really quite different than feeling accused by God.
Yeah.
But even that matches my temperament. I enjoy the challenge. And I know there are other people who are just horrified by God using them to finish the great struggle between good and evil. So there will be that differences. Now, what our study guide, the official study guide, Clifford Goldstein, introduces a strong element of righteousness by faith and does not necessarily address the diversity of problems with experience, but he does bring in a strong emphasis on righteousness by faith, which you can find in the mature writings of Ellen White, in particular her chapter, Joshua and the Angel, in the book Prophets and Kings. It's a marvelous presentation how a person is in judgment but secure in the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. Now, there's one other thing that I would like to mention here before we start the court, and we'll do this from time to time. I would like to simply mention names. There are some key names here, and I know the author of the quarterly, Clifford Goldstein, has a very specific set of convictions which drive him. For example, he does not hold to multiple applications in the book of Daniel. We'll see this in several different settings. But he does hold strongly to a righteousness by faith emphasis, where we rely on Jesus' merits, not on our own good deeds. And I know of someone who holds a position very, very close to Goldstein's, who simply said one of the things that Desmond Ford did for the church was to introduce us to a strong doctrine of justification by faith and the forensic view of the atonement. That's unusual because when Desmond Ford attacked the doctrine of the investigative judgment, he made no room for it. He's very strong in his, you might say, sovereignty of God view, very strong emphasis. So it's been very difficult for the church to deal with that. I would like for us to see what contributions he has made, but recognize that not everyone will be happy with that. So, with that bit of a background, let's turn to the issue in this first one, and I ask the questions. Christians have claimed the Bible teaches a war in heaven. How do we know that? What's the clue that there is a war in heaven?
Maybe you're looking for something more complicated than this, but there's even that phrase, which appears in the book of Revelation, that there was war in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So if one believes the Bible, as I do, then that would be a clue right there.
Revelation 12.
Revelation 12, absolutely.
Yeah. And actually the scope of that chapter is amazing. The panoramic view of that chapter is exceeded by few places in Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think of Ephesians 6. There's this, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. And here Paul alludes very, very clearly to some kind of cosmic struggle that is going on behind the scenes. And if you want, I'll even jump into Job 1, 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting because it's like there's a play on the stage, but you and I, the readers, get to go behind the scenes and see what's mm-hmm. happening there on a cosmic level.
Mm-hmm.
And I would even throw in some places like Ezekiel 28 or thereabouts, where you have the king of Tyre standing in, as it were, for as an agent of the devil. You see suddenly the language goes cosmic, at least I think it does.
It
breaks out of its temporal zone and starts talking about Eden and all kinds of things like that. So those are some clues that I tap into.
And Isaiah 14 is another one, the famous
verse. Yeah, Isaiah 14. Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, those are not identified clearly as applying to Satan until well into the Christian era.
Yeah, and what about Jesus' comments about not fearing people who can just kill the body, but who can also
destroy the soul?
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, just the message of struggle or the motif of struggle that Jesus uses in describing his casting out of evil spirits, and a statement in Luke about seeing Satan fall like lightning from heaven. So I think there's a number of passages from the Bible that would that would support
that. It's almost like this is presumed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Adventists have said, and I think, and it's not unique with Adventists, the cosmic struggle, that's, you know, C.S. Lewis and John Milton, those are perhaps two of the better-known ones who developed that with great intensity. But Adventists have said that the judgment also has something to do with this cosmic struggle, and that what happens on the cross and what we do in response to that cross is part of this cosmic battle. And we'll see that as we develop here, and I think that's Goldstein's intent in the study guide.
See, Alden, I think that's a very, very important point that I think you should make again, that there is not only a cosmic dimension to living, but there's a cosmic dimension to the plan of salvation, including the judgment.
Mm-hmm. And as we think about that, then our role can become, well, it's really quite different than just ordinary people worried about our own individual salvation.
That's right.
There's a broader scene. People mm-hmm. are watching.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, how does the Bible itself perceive that? Do they see Satan as a conquered foe?
Well, that's an interesting question, Alden. Certainly he's alive and functioning.
Yes.
I have to think a little bit about whether he's conquered or not.
Well, they do have that passage in Revelation 12. It says, "Rejoice, O heavens, but woe to you, earth."
Yeah.
So he is... He's tossed out, but he's down here.
He's alive and well.
He's alive and well.
A person in their death struggle, so to speak, can still be destructive to others. And
yes.
Maybe that's one way of looking at what Satan is mm-hmm. doing now. His doom is sure.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But that doesn't mean that he is helpless at this point.
Yeah. And certainly the New Testament is full of all that language about the conclusion of the battle and how we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities and power, and you alluded to that, Dave, in your particular story. Well, next week we are going to continue on further with the question of judgment must begin. That's our theme for next week. My thanks to both of you, and to Susan Michael, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in. For Probe, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.